age really reveals us in a way that youth can't, is that things take time. Things take time and patience, and sometimes change is faster than we think, but often it's much slower. Do we allow for the beauty of that, the texture of it, the richness of it, or are we always trying to squeeze it, right? And that goes back to our relationship to faith, our relationship to time.
Hello, and welcome back to the You're Great podcast with your host, Unique Hammond. Today, I sit with Dani Beinstein, a psychological counseling astrologer who is currently based in Nashville. If you've been following me for a while, I love to dabble in all kinds of things. My mind is a curious traveler in the space of health and wellness, and I will take any prompt or tool from wherever I can to help perpetuate growth, mind, body, spirit. So I am always dabbling, and I love it. I'm not a person who thrives in black or white. I thrive in nuance. So for me, everything is fair game, and I love it because it means that I'm not stuck in an identity of any sort. I am constantly navigating that space between. This is where I thrive, and I honor that. So astrology, yay, I'm Pisces and Scorpio rising and Capricorn, and always kind of like would keep an eye out for different developments in that space. 9 years ago, I had Dani do a reading for me and my daughters because I was really curious about them and just curious where things were in my own chart. And I just had a lovely experience. I saved those recordings so that at some point, if they were ever interested, they could hear it. And they did, actually. They tapped me for that. They're like, hey, can I have a listen to that? Recently, I reached out to Dani and I'm like, hey, do you have anything on the Chiron? I was poking around and I'm 48, you know, and a half, okay, turning the bend to 49. And I feel like not just shifts within, but shifts all over. Is there anything significant going on? And what is the Chiron? And she said, you know, I've never really done a podcast talking about those major transitions, the Saturn return, Uranus opposition, the Chiron, these various things that happen throughout a human life, which interestingly enough, especially the Chiron, lines up with what could be perimenopause or menopause for women. So that's a really interesting internal, external, environmental connection. And I was really interested in exploring it with her. We actually did a reading before the podcast so I could really understand where I am in that process. In June, I just started my Chiron, which is the wounded healer. And my Chiron is in, I believe, the house of health and wellness. So I was just like, okay, so much here to process. And I just got a lot out of it. Anyway, we sit, we chat about all the major life transitions and really just a wonderful conversation around change and really embracing age and the unexpected life that we all live. I think all of us have this idea of what our life will be. And then life serves us up what we need. Even if we want to reject it and say, no, this isn't mine and why is this happening? A lot of times the wisdom is in what life is and not fighting the truth of what life is and stepping into it and embracing it and understanding it. Not accepting it as a space that we're going to always live in, like my illness, Crohn's, was a teacher. And I really made it through by allowing it to be my teacher. Also, understanding that it wasn't who I was, it wasn't my identity, it was a place that I was visiting. With all that said, I hope you enjoy our conversation. I also will link where you can find out more about Dani's work and if you'd like to connect with her and learn more about the transition that you might be in. There's a waitlist for my next 12-week women's group if you are interested. I also have group coaching for those who are on a Bean protocol. And I also offer courses. This will be for hormones and gut. And honestly, anytime we work on our gut, we are working on our hormones. It is all connected. We are not disconnected beings. Everything is connected. Taking care of our body, nourishing our body well over time pays dividends. So wherever you are in your health journey, just show up for that incredible body of yours and know that deep nourishment is a profound way to change the course of your health. Hi, Dani. Welcome to the Your Great podcast.
Hi, I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
So excited to have you here. You did a reading for me and I loved it. Recently, when I reached out to you, I'm like, okay, what is going on? I feel this big energetic shift in my life. And yes, part perimenopause but it didn't feel, it could be hormonal as well. But because I eat so well, I was like, well, hormones, my cycles feel pretty good. But something else energetically really shifted in June for me. And I remember somewhere in my mind going, is there a big transition during this time? And started researching it and then saw that it was the Chiron. And so I reached out to you because I was like, let's have you on to talk about some of these major transitions that happened in our lives that interestingly enough coincide with also big transitions in female bodies as well, which is now very fascinating to me. So,
There are three major universal that are relatively age specific. So the first major one is the Saturn return, which many people know about, happens at about 28 and a half years of age. And it's when Saturn comes full circle. And at the Saturn return, we start to feel the weight of adult responsibility. How are we going to make our way through the world? What kind of duties or responsibilities do we want to take on? There's a deeper level often of individuation, although that starts to happen earlier, related to Saturn, actually. We have transits every 7 years. So if you think about it, 7 years old, a child starts to individuate in a new way from their household, right? Often if they're homeschooled, it doesn't matter if they're homeschooled or they go, there's that, the personality is pretty strong by that point. Spiritualists will say that. We don't fully incarnate until 7 years old, as an example, right? Biologists say that we really shed and have a whole new set of cells every 7 years. Mm-hmm. So astrologically, Saturn indicates these structural shifts in our life. The next one is 14, adolescent, in a female's body. She's usually menstruating by now, right? There's those qualities, those experiences. At about 14 years old, we have that real next level of individuation from the parents. 21 years old, we're inching closer to adulthood. One goes to university, they're preparing to leave university. If they've gone out into the world, they have a sense of, this is how the skills I need or need to really take on. And by 28, 29, adulthood. And then the cycle continues, right? Every 7 years. The second major transit of the three major universal transits has to do with Uranus. Uranus is liberation, disruptor even. And Uranus takes roughly 84 years to grow in the zodiac. So halfway at that point, at about between 42 and 44, we have our Uranus opposition. And this is associated with midlife transit. We also have a Saturn opposition around this time, so Saturn opposing Saturn, both of these taken together, but really the Uranus opposition is my time on this earth is finite. What have I left behind? What do I need to embrace? What changes feel imminent? It is a time where there's a lot of changes, often in relationship status or women who've had children maybe younger, their children are getting older. You may have heard of people or women who are getting pregnant. I wasn't expecting it. Hear that story all the time. Uranus opposition. So if there's been an over-indexing of career, for example, there can be I need to focus on my personal life, vice versa, right? A really strong focus on the family life, right? That's a simplistic version of it, but there's this real change maker energy. And then 49 to 51, we have the Chiron return. So Chiron takes about 49 to 51 years to come around the zodiac. Chiron is the wounded healer. Or Chiron, who was born half horse, half man, abandoned by its mother because it was seen as beastly, picked up by Apollo, taught things like archery, astronomy, medicine, etc. And in that myth, the same thing that relates to Chiron's core wound becomes alchemized into his offering. So in the Chiron return, we're really dealing with core wounds that are related to our story that feel out of our control. Meaning, there's no way we could have, I created this to happen to me. Maybe on a soul level, you know, we either get assignment or we choose, right? This is going to be part of it. But from the mortal lens, what is the part of us that we have really wrestled with? What feels like the primal wound? And then the sign in the house and potentially aspects it's making gives us, just like with our Saturn return, just like with the Uranus opposition, gives us more clues and information towards our personal core wound that we are here to navigate. So it can be an emotional time for women. In some ways, Chiron initiates us into Crone. Right?
And what is Crone?
And I think, so Crone is that witness consciousness.
Okay.
It's deep wisdom. It's witness consciousness, meaning there is a radical acceptance when we are in Crone and not resisting, we are not pushing against, we have taken a large arc of our soul journey on this mortal earth, and we come to deeper layers of acceptance. Now we are living in an era where there is a lot of fear around aging, not just around death, which we don't enough in our culture in a real cyclical way, but also aging in terms of vanity. And the Chiron return can be a real, sure, the Uranus opposition too, but the Chiron return can be a real anchoring in of that rather than fighting it. What a privilege to be on this earth for 50 years. Right? What an awesome privilege. And we are obviously, no, not obviously, but in some ways we're living longer, you know, than we ever have. But what's the meaning behind that? Are we here longer, or are we imbuing our lives with meaning, with significance, right? According to pretty much every metric around longevity, the two major indicators are family and faith, or community and faith. Everything's contextual, right? So it's how we relate to that and how we relate to our own aging. And there is something so beautiful, like truly beautiful about Crone energy and around women who have fully embraced aging. And I think the Chiron return, it starts younger than that, right? I mean, we are seeing 20 somethings putting filler in their face and all of that, right? What is our relationship to this vessel? And I don't say this from a judgmental place. I say this from a truly, you know, a true exploration of our mortal journey and what it means to age and what does it mean to age with grace. And all of these things are especially potent around the Chiron return.
So is the Chiron kind of this invitation to reflect both on the life we've been mm-hmm. living and mm-hmm. kind of what we want in the next leg of our journey?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. And a real honoring of our journey, right? We, because of technology and social media, we've always been a comparative human species is comparative, right? But it's on hyperdrive. So coming home to ourselves, to our soul journey, right? Like you're an empty nester or about to be an empty nester. That exploration creates a lot of spaciousness for exploration in that way. You know, for those who don't have children or haven't had children, maybe there has been a focus on career. Maybe they can take their foot off the pedal
a little bit, experience life from a different place. It's so interesting to me how we don't talk about and ritualize these rites of passage the way cultures have traditionally, and how we just, in our divorce from nature and in our divorce from recognizing we are nature, we don't seem to really embrace, as a culture at large, media-wise, I know there are pockets of communities that are different, these important rites of passage and the mourning of what has been, right? Like, I have friends who are in their 50s and 60s, and part of them mourns that their children will never be small again. That time is past. There's the hope of grandchildren, but there is, right? Even whatever our experience is, that are we metabolizing and mourning stages of our life so we can open up to what wants to come in rather than clinging to the past?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is interesting what you're saying. This is my first time in this life being a parent. This is my first time becoming an empty nester. And in myself, I witness, I mean, I guess I've always, I don't know if it's my Pisces son, but I've always seen parenthood as a ritual of holding on and letting go, holding on and letting go. Holding on when they need, holding close, you know, like we carry them for 9 months and then we let them go for the first time. Mm-hmm. And you did allude to the fact that based on the sign and the house, mm-hmm. that, you know, each person will kind of go through this differently, this empty nest, this. And yes. I reached out to you right away. Do you have anything on the Chiron? Because mm-hmm. I feel like I'm headed into this major transition in my life, seeking tools of understanding so that I can go through this time and not just be blinded of what's going on, but like really expand out my awareness of, hey, what is this whole human transition that's happening as I move as a woman into my 50s? And can I deeply embrace my aging? And can I deeply lean into this transitional time, almost like, you know, maybe it's a little early to use the word matriarch, but you know,
yeah, that absolutely. And I think there's no right way to do it, right? There's no singular way to do it. It's a deeply personal spiritual journey, but I do think it's a really significant transit. And there's a real whole other level of becoming. Mm. We have this idea in our head that life somehow, you know, peaks at 33. And, you know, some people have the best love affairs of their life in their 60s or 70s.
Oh, yeah.
Some people are the happiest they've ever been in their 60s or 70s. So I do think there's something about coming to a place where we own our journey, and it's less about how do we fit into society, what's our role, etc., and more, I get to be on this earth. Obviously, that's a privilege over, you know, if one can explore that. But I think it's we just don't talk about it enough. And I don't know about you, but when I see a woman who's radiant in her 70s, it is a level of beauty that is transcendent.
Expansive.
Yes, and joy-filled and present, deeply present.
Yeah, the word that comes to mind is embodied. I've seen those women. They're far and in between. I feel like more so in today's modern culture, I feel like women are injecting and tucking and pulling, and there's not this real deepening of self-love and self-care. There's almost trying to escape the inevitable. So there's not a lot of those expanders out there.
exactly what I was referring. One of my closest friends and I were in Sedona, and we were in a spa area, and there were these saunas, and then in the middle of the saunas there were these hot tubs, and we were sitting in the sauna, and this woman, she must have been in her late 70s, was so filled with joy and just totally nude, you know, hopped in the jacuzzi. And as she saw us smiling at her, and, you know, we both said in unison, "You're just so beautiful. You're such an inspiration. And I'd love to see more of that."
Well, that's like embracing, embodying the journey. And I would imagine, and you can tell me, this is, you know, based on, would you say that based on the life you've lived, if you've lived it out of touch with your spiritual, emotional body, that when you hit the Chiron, is it kind of a reckoning?
Yes, in a very real way, it can be. So can the Uranus opposition.
Mm.
Because early mid-40s is young, but one's life has taken form in a way, yeah. Right? And that's a substantial amount of time. Even though things take time, it's a substantial amount of time where that reckoning, it's why, you know, we do see divorce at that, higher numbers of divorce around that time. There can be more fear in making a career shift, but that can show up.
That was when, at 40, 38, I started the transition, and at 40, I started my nutrition practice. So that's a really interesting, and it was a big deal because I was letting go of this full identity I'd built through my 30s of who I was and how I showed up in the world, 20s and 30s, actually. And then in my 40s, I was back in school. I was learning, getting a nutrition degree. I was totally changing a 20-year career. So that's interesting. And it felt scary and really positive at the same time. Like it was just it was just an uprooting of like, and a redirection. So is that kind of indicative of the Uranus?
Yes. I mean, that's yes. And so let's get into another kind of indication of the passage of time, which is the nodal return. Oh. So the nodes have to deal with our self-actualization. Often it indicates moving out of our comfort zone, but not necessarily. It depends on the context of our north node, meaning if it's independent from aspect to major parts in our chart, it may feel more challenging. If it's conjoined, it's going to feel a little bit different. But our first north node return is at about 19, and our second one is at about 37. And around that time can be the Saturn square Saturn. So that is a time where we feel called into self-actualization to make changes in that way. And so what I'm hearing is that sandwich time between your north node, your Saturn square Saturn, your north node return, and the Uranus opposition, which are really rich years. Those are really rich years.
It's like about a 5-year journey. That they come together around the same time is really fascinating. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much more complexity, right, than people, the memes tell us about astrology. There's so much richness there, so much beyond the archetypes, which are so meaningful. It's like how we relate to time. The other thing, and that I think age really reveals us in a way that youth can't, is that things take time.
Patience.
Things take time and patience. And sometimes change is faster than we think, but often it's much slower.
Right.
And do we allow for the beauty of that, the texture of it, the richness of it, or are we always trying to squeeze it, right? And that goes back to our relationship to faith, our relationship to time. When you're a kid, it's like waiting for recess can feel like forever. And then, you know, I'm like, I'm present. But the years are going by faster and faster, and time is really speeding up. I know that there's some spiritual and, you know, bioenergetic reasons for that too. Like, people will talk about, this is out of my depth of field, people talk about how time is actually accelerating. It feels like it's accelerating, but I've heard people speak about how it is actually accelerating in our relationship to time. But I do think there is something, right? When you're younger, in some ways, you just want, when I have clients who are in their 20s, they just want to know what's going to happen, right? I'm in my mid 40s. I'm like, can we just slow it down? Can we just, I just want to sit here with my dog.
Mm-hmm.
And this precious, you know, my dogs who are not going to be around forever. They really do teach us that, right? And in, like, let's just slow it down. They're all ready to. And I know people feel that about their children, right?
Oh, yeah.
Can we just stay at 6 months? Can we just stay at 3 years? You know?
Yeah. And, you know, it is interesting, the wanting to know the future mm-hmm. casting that we do as people. The conversation with my 22-year-old daughter is, you know, what I was saying to her this morning, I said, you're 22. These are the years that you are building skills. Don't worry about having it figured out. Don't worry mm-hmm. about knowing what you want to do with your life. Just explore, because your exploration gives you tools for when you actually figure out what that thing is.
You know? Absolutely. And then whatever that thing is, it may transform or shift. There's no arrival point, right? I think that our relationship to ourselves, if we are conscious, evolves.
Yeah.
Right? But we do see plenty of women in their 50s who are adolescent.
Oh, yeah.
So just the aging itself does not guarantee. We have to be participatory.
Yes.
In metabolizing our experiences and digesting our experiences.
And willing to step in.
Yes.
And accept the medicine of
yes.
our choices and the medicine yes. of the things that we can do better and the things that we can let go of. It's
yes.
medicine. It's the medicine of time and experience that can lead to this transition of beautiful maturity and presence and grace and aging gracefully. It's that kind of pushing away and not wanting to lean in. I think that is part of the problem. It's like, no, lean in. Don't walk away.
Yes.
In to the discomfort a little bit, because that's part of the process.
And it's the gateway to wisdom.
Age in itself isn't an indicator of maturity mm-hmm. or wisdom. It's just the invitation.
Yes.
Yeah.
I really think a big part of it is, are we inner referenced? Not from a narcissistic standpoint, but do we involve ourselves in our exploration, or are we outer referenced, outer focused, right? Do we take time with ourselves to really explore our behaviors, I think the thing for me around social media that I find the most distressing is how much it's flattened everything. Everything is either the best or the worst.
Or true or false.
Yes.
There's no nuance. It's lost nuance.
Yeah. And we need that. We need that. And we have historically looked to storytelling, you know, around the campfire and then to books and then to screens in order to understand that. And in order to, but there is a flattening, and it's problematic. And yet I really think that there is a response to that is occurring.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there is a devaluing.
Yes.
There's a devaluing there because of
the human experience.
Yeah. There's an oversaturation
mm-hmm.
there. You know, we have call out culture.
Yeah.
Because people are out there just trying to make money and will say anything. So it's like these pendulum is swinging,
yeah.
right? And it's a really interesting atmosphere that you're talking about in social media. I try to approach it as a tool,
same.
Yeah, as a conversation yeah. tool, because it really, to give the nuance, which is the art is in the nuance, is in mm-hmm. the differentiation of how we do things. And, you know, I do feel like you do a really wonderful job of curating your information, just to put that out there on your Instagram.
I really try. I try and capture moments of beauty. I live out in the woods, and I, you know, I really try and capture that and share that. I try and shy away from declarative sentences, mm-hmm. really bold declarative sentences, mm-hmm. because different people are going to interpret things differently. It's not, and because I'm aware of the nuance of everything, right? And I certainly do not put out any kind of perfection. My life is really beautiful, but there's a lot of complexity to it. There's a lot of complexity to my family of origin. There's complexity to my relationship. There's complexity to the fact that I haven't gotten pregnant. I don't have children. Like, there's a lot of layers to it. And yet there's so much beauty in it. And I've taken each experience and worked with it. I see it all as clay, right? Like, what am I going to do with it? It's this thing, right? It's this entity. What am I going to do with it? What am I going to make out of it? Really sitting with that, which is why I've always loved art and storytelling, because, you know, great literature takes us into the mind of another and builds that muscle of textured, nuanced understanding.
There's so much maturity and nuance. I think that that's the people who are making these great black and white statements are lacking in maturity.
Yeah.
Because as you're describing very beautifully, as you have a very complex life and things going on that are not only seen to the outside. And because of the way you're relating to it is what I'm hearing, by the way, so you can tell me where I'm wrong, but is that you understand deeply that there isn't a black or white, that there's more nuance than we can even imagine in every human life of what you're going through, of what you're dealing with.
Yes. And much of it is out of our control. And I think that's the hardest thing for humans to really process, is that we have a master addiction to control. If I do this, this will be the outcome. Says who?
Right. Right. Like,
the reality is there are no guarantees. And you can still have such a beautiful life, right? It's not like, oh, if I don't get this thing, my life is going to be, to hinge our happiness, which, what is even that? We get moments of that. I think fulfillment, contentment, knowing ourselves, the unexamined life, right?
I mean, you just said so many beautiful things that are, I think, really important. This idea of something, anything in life being a given, like, oh, I'm going to do all the right things and this is going to be the outcome. I think, you know, again, it really goes back to that maturity being present to our lives, to accept that this thing that I wanted to happen didn't happen. Where is the learning? Where is the grace? Where is the transcending? Where is the deviation, the ability to be liquid enough, pliable enough to deviate and go, aha, so what is here for me? What is next? What is?
Yes, without then putting on this false notion that it's all just bliss. No, it's layered.
One painful.
Can both. Yes, one can mourn and experience gratitude.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I find so powerful in, I am not a Christian, but one of the things that I have always moved me so deeply about Christianity is this concept of mercy and forgiveness, like at its core, right? It's like, I haven't been baptized in the faith, but there is something to me so deeply, deeply resonant about that. And to feel oneself as totally accepted, through the power and grace of God. Is, I think, the older I get, the more I understand that from a deeply soul-filled place.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like unconditional love.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, there is a, interestingly, Saturn is in Pisces right now, and we're learning the limits of endless compassion, right? There's a way in which our relationship with whatever you want to call it, I use the word God, but you can give that endless compassion. But as humans, we need to have our limits.
Right.
We also need structure. We need boundaries. We need, all of that is Saturn, right? There needs to be action and consequence in the mortal realm. I think, you know, as we get older, we realize there's not necessarily a causality of I do all these good things and I get the good result. But there is often causality between how we feel about ourselves when we are operating out of integrity.
Yeah, and doing good just for good,
yes.
Not for, and I deserve this because
yes.
I do good. It's like having a condition on doing good is already missing the point of good, right? It's like you
That's
can,
it.
Yeah, it's like the point of good is to participate in a soul alignment with your values and belief systems, and doing good isn't as a way to receive good, but that would be nice.
Yes. I mean, I always think of, like, you know, what we value in the society. And then I think of, like, the janitor at a school who is working at that school. So his kids, let's say he values that education and his kids can go to that school, and he shows up every day with a smile. I'm like, that person is the height of integrity to me.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's important as we get older to really come into, like, what are our values?
Yeah. And hopefully beyond, like, starting to plant those seeds in all of these different major transitions where you're asking of, like, what are my values? What's important to me?
Yeah.
And how do I show up for those things? And I think that what you're touching on is, as we get older, it's maybe a little easier to start parsing that out a little bit and going,
yeah,
these are important principles to guide my life. These principles of doing good without the intention of I'm expecting a good result in my life because I do good or I
yes.
do well. You know, it's yes. really, it's like I'm here for the journey of my life. And as this journey of my life, I will do good as part of it because that is resonant to me.
Yeah.
Despite what the world gives me back, because sometimes the people who give the most are the ones who are given the greatest hurdles. I don't know if you've noticed that, but
yeah. I mean, this, right? This is the thing. It's like 100% I've noticed it. And
wait,
it's yeah. And it's that whole thing, like, you know, why do bad things happen to good people? Mm-hmm. And I think the mortal world is inherently unfair. I think we have to drop this idea of fairness. It doesn't exist.
It gets in the way.
It does. It does, because it's just not fair. It's this world is never going to make sense. This mortal world. It's not, and we try and superimpose these ideologies onto it to say make it make sense. But humans are notoriously unpredictable, and we're complex. And who knows what we're doing on this green and blue ball in the middle of the universe spinning for a short period of time. Like, it makes no sense. And we have to wrestle with that. And I think as we get older and as we move through these transits, again, if we're metabolizing them, if we're present to our lives, something happens that wakes us up. Sadly, it's often a tragedy that wakes us up on this earth plane, right? Or, you know, those who've experienced real heartache from a young age, and the old souls, so, you know, as they're called. But that's the truth of life. Like, the wisdom that's always been true will continue to be true, even if we pretend otherwise.
Well, I think that trying to control that which cannot be controlled, right? I think that is the constant human invitation, is to realize that you can put in the work every single day.
Yep.
I mean, I see this in my practice a lot, where women come to me who can't have children. Mm-hmm. They've treated mm-hmm. their body fairly their whole life, gone out of their way mm-hmm. to eat well. There are no issues. Everything looks mm-hmm. fine. How come I can't have a baby?
Yeah.
This isn't fair. And then their friend who drinks and parties and goes away for a weekend in Vegas is pregnant.
Yeah.
And it's like, what is, where, you know, so it's like the fairness is such an interesting thing that can really stall out a human life, because it can feel so unfair that that becomes the narrative of the life, versus, you know, to not quote Rolling Stones, but you don't always get what you want, but somehow what is it that you needed? Are you getting what you truly need instead of
that line? Is one of the great lines of wisdom of the 20th century.
It really is.
It's just the truth. And I think we don't want it to be, but it is. But there's such a beauty in aging when we settle more deeply into who we are and our journey, and radical acceptance.
And presence and mm-hmm. grieving and letting go of what we thought we wanted in the place of what life served up, showing us, hey, this is actually what you needed.
Yeah,
you thought you wanted this and this is what you were going for, but, you know, here's what you need actually. And I think about that a lot in raising children, is because I see the adults that it produces, these kids who get everything they want, but not what they need.
I mean, that's the environment. Not with my parents specifically, but that is the world that I grew up around, where there was material excess, but a real lack of connectivity, connection. Who is this actual child? Mm-hmm. And there are consequences to that.
Oh, yeah, because there becomes this unfillable void, mm-hmm. a lack
Hungry
of identity.
Ghost.
A hungry ghost. You know, you could put the term spoiled on it, because a person who gets everything they want but not what they need doesn't know how to give and receive, right?
Yes.
It's about the pursuit of things instead of the pursuit of self and actualization. Yep. So the phenomenon of getting everything you want but not what you need, as you put it really well, creates the hungry ghost and shells of human who don't know how to connect, because we learn how to connect through parent-child relationship and the working things out and getting what you need. And it's not always what you want. And sometimes that's frustrating, but that getting these needs met are so deeply important to the journey. Not to say that you can't shift that narrative later in life as an adult to go, oh, wow, everything that I want makes me feel empty. But how do I get what I need? How do I sit with the discomfort of what I actually need? And how do I even begin to drill down and go, what do I need? What do I need?
Yes. I mean, that is something on a personal note that I have really wrestled with, because nothing in my life looks anything like I thought it would. There are things that in my mid-40s are only now starting to really make sense. And I am a person who's examined myself for a long time, but again, time, right? I thought I would be living in a townhouse in the West Village or in London, a lawyer, 3 kids.
Wow.
Married to a Wall Street guy, married to a lawyer, et cetera. That's what I was raised in the culture to be. I was a philosophy undergrad. My professors were like, you need to go to law school. I was fascinated by law. That's not the life. I live in the woods of Tennessee. I mean, if you had told me this would be my life. And yet, you know, there is a, Cheryl Strayed calls it a ghost ship. There is a ghost ship of that life. And I don't think that life would have been bad. It's just not the life I was supposed to have. I have plenty of clients who are living a version of that life. And it wasn't meant for me. And this other thing was meant for me. And it boggles my mind, but there's a awesomeness and presence to it because it's so not what I expected that I, you know, there is a real alchemical change that has happened in my body to catch up with it.
Wow.
And it's been a real process of both grieving, both grief and gratitude simultaneously.
Wow.
And it, you know, it's funny because when I talk to my high school friends, they're like, it both makes no sense and all the sense in the world, right? And that's the beauty of having friendships that are that are 30 years old, yeah. Right? There's just something to this life. And I really, you know, many, let's say, of my clients who have that life, the version, you know, a version of it, they weren't necessarily planning on that either.
Huh.
I mean, they had to go to law school, they had to do, you know, or whatever their career is to get them to, but some were kind of raised to go that, but others weren't.
Right.
I have clients who they never thought they'd be a mother. All of a sudden they're a mother of multiple children. Right? Mm-hmm. I was nannying and babysitting, starting as soon as I could, obsessed with babies, small children. I don't have any. Like, what? It makes no sense. But there's beauty in all of it.
Yeah.
And grief and gratitude.
I really sense that with you as well. I sense the disbelief in some ways and the absolute presence to where you, and gratitude for where you are now too. But I do sense that, like, it's an interesting oppositions, like things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But I think that's true of life, is we can hold simultaneously conflicting feelings. Like, you know, let's say I'll have clients and they're about to take the leap of getting married. They feel such excitement and grief.
Yeah.
Because again, there is a ghost ship. There's a life that isn't going to happen. There's a life that is going to happen, but there's a life that isn't.
Yeah. And with every choice we make, we shift the narrative of our life. You know,
there's no way around that. And if we live in constant delay, that's its own choice.
Oh, yeah. And also, that's an interesting, procrastination, I think, is a trauma response. Not wanting to make
dilemma.
The wrong choice, right? Dilemma.
Yes.
I'm not going to make the wrong choice, so I'm just not going to choose anything. And then that is a choice as well.
Yeah.
That's interesting. It is interesting, the expectation of what we think life will be and then the reality of what life is for us and how differently that is governed. So far, life has turned out a lot more complex and amazing than I ever expected from when I was a little kid, and equal parts painful and beautiful. And I do think that is the human, if we're present, that is the human experience. It's not one thing, it's always going to be. And I love you. And I could see myself being a nomad, not attached to anyone.
And
I think this idea of that's why the thing in the health, in the world, social media world, has never resonated with me as a complex soul of, if it's not a hell yeah, it's a hell no. And I wish I could relate
never,
to that.
I cannot relate to that at all. Never been able to relate to that. It's like, for me, there's like a soft landing of like, yeah, this could work.
Let's check this out.
Yeah, this could work. I'm going to see. And also there's a discovery, like, you know, like when I bought this house, it wasn't like, oh, this is going to be my house for the rest of my life. It was like, I'm going to see. And then these things keep happening. Like, our neighbors have become close friends, and there's this unfolding that's happening. I'm like, oh yeah, we were supposed to be here for other reasons than we're just, you know, and letting that play out. I was just like, it was the soft kind of like, yeah, this could work. This seems like we're supposed to be here, even though it makes no sense. We're not in the city. And it's been interesting.
How is that not living in the city? Because I was just saying to my partner, I grew up for the first 14 years of my life in Big Sur, in the country, away from stimulation of city. From 14 to 48, I have been in LA.
Yeah.
And the part of me that is that is kind of almost like a siren call back to nature, back to, and then I wonder, can I even handle that? It's such a change from, for your nervous system. Like, what has it been like for you?
Well, I grew up in New York City. Mm-hmm. Oh, I went to Connecticut most weekends, and I did summer camp up in New Hampshire when I was little. So, but I do not have parents who were like, let's go on a hike on the weekends, right? Mm-hmm. I did not have that kind of parenting. So I was out in the country, but I was not like in nature, even though I was technically in nature, I was. Mm-hmm. And then was always a city person, like city, right? And then I fell in love with a dude from New Zealand who grew up in the bush of New Zealand.
Awesome.
With like nothing but silence. And so that kind of coincided with me starting to crave a little nature. We went to Topanga, then we went to New Zealand, which rocked me to my core. I became so acutely aware of my Americanness in a way that traveling, the only time I can say that is when I lived in Italy during 9/11. And I was from New York City. That was, you know, that brought up stuff, but love to travel the world. Really got my wanderlust from my dad. My parents had lived in Hong Kong for a bit before I was born. Anyway, went to New Zealand. It was so, I was fighting myself there. I was like, no, we're going to go back to the States and we're going to move to New York City. And that was my plan. I was like, no, but something happened and shifted me while I was there around an orientation towards nature. I fought it the whole time I was there. And then I came back. My whole family has, well, most of my family has relocated to Colorado, spent some time in Colorado. And I said, no, I'm not supposed to go to New York City. Let's check out Nashville. And the key was, the plan was to be kind of closer to the city in what is called East Nashville, which is very similar to Los Angeles' Silver Lake, like very similar to Silver Lake. And I just, when I started looking for houses to buy my first home, I just kept being pulled further. And then I ended up with the house that was the furthest out. And at first, because we were so nomadic in New Zealand, I was just happy to be somewhere. And then it's been a real necessary shift in my nervous system. And now, like, we just went to Greece and we did a few days in Athens. Athens, you know, is a chaotic, incredible city. But I'm basically, my mind is like, oh, like a week in a city, 2 days in a city, and I'm done. Like, my whole nervous system has shifted. Now when I think about travel, I'm like, I just want to get in the car and go to another state park, go to like a national park or a state park. I want to go to New Zealand. I want to see wildlife. I've done the history thing. I've done the theater thing. So it's been transformative. Mm. I mean, I just want to be around animals and land and natural waters. It's really been a shift for me. It astounds me. It takes a second. But to not hear sirens, to wake up, the bird life in Nashville, I mean, where I am, the closest I've ever heard is New Zealand. So to be, it's immersed in that, it's a godsend. But my ego did not choose it.
Ooh, that's a good point.
I had to listen to something deeper. And I said, every time we go to East Nashville, I'm like, should we sell this and move to East Nashville? Like, every time. And he's like, yeah, but then you always want to come back here. Like, every time. And we go to East Nashville like twice a week. And I'm like, I love this. Should we be here? Like, I have that dilemma, but I did make a decision, you know, and I'm just with it right now.
Was that part of your Uranus? Or was
I'm
that,
in my Uranus opposition
you're
in right
your
now.
Rihanna. Oh, interesting. So
yes. So when I was in New Zealand, it's on my Uranus line, and I was having a Uranus transit to my Venus values. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was going to go one way. It went another way. I'm in it. I'm in a real kind of shift in my consciousness. I have so many crazy transits happening right now, more than any other time in my lifetime, and potentially for the rest of my lifetime. This is a crucible for me right now. So I think being here is really great for that.
Space is what yeah. comes to me is there's space.
Yeah.
To go through it. And that's a gift that somewhere in your spirit knew that you needed for this time of life is space.
Yeah. And, you know, my family, like I said, is in Colorado and I've gone back and forth, should I be? But there's something about this soft earth and mm-hmm. this fertile land. Mm-hmm. And there's this gorgeous rainstorm, summer rainstorm mm-hmm. right now. I mean, Colorado gets those, but there's something about the southeast and the yin of the landscape that's mm-hmm. very nourishing to me and my some people find the desert to be that. That's not me.
No. Yeah. If I'm going to be anywhere, it's going to be lush.
Yeah.
Lush or lush and tropical.
Yeah, exactly.
But lush. Something about yes. desert is too sparse for me. There's something that almost throws me into fight or flight in a way.
Yeah.
Like there's too much deprivation. The land feels deprived.
I feel that too, but you know, people enough, you know, it has a strong spiritual connotation, like in the, you know, wandering the desert for 40 years and all of that. I just went to Greece and of course, like Greece is stunning and all the things. And I was like, this is windy and dry. Like mm-hmm. I belong where I am, at least right now.
Amazing. How does that feel to know you where you are is where you belong?
It feels, it doesn't mean that my mind isn't like, what would it be like to live?
never ending. The mind, never ending. What's next? Where am I going?
Exactly.
How's that happening?
Exactly. Exactly. And I think just the finite nature of time, like, you know, it expands and contracts in our relationship to it, but it's like you can only eat so much at the buffet.
Yeah.
And what's actually nourishing to my body, right? Like we have traveled a lot since 2017 and my mind is always like, oh, I want to be, and then I'm like, I don't want to get on a plane right now. My body does not want to get on a plane right now. It like, that is not what I am, and listening to that, overriding the egoic urge, the mind to say, what do I need? Mm-hmm. And I also love a road trip. That's a whole other thing.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so with you. I call myself a go dog.
Yeah.
Like, you know how some dogs always want to jump yeah. in the car?
Yeah.
I'm a go dog. Where are we going?
Yes, totally. And it's been transformative, truly. I highly recommend it forever long. And LA has a very, well, for me, LA was my Pluto line, Uranus line, Mars line. It was very loaded for me. But even up in Topanga, you know, there were the threat of the fires all the time. And that wasn't as peaceful as I needed it to be.
Yeah.
And it's dry.
Do you have any lines running through that are significant running through Nashville for you?
Yes. Neptune, which is spirituality, mysticism, and healing.
Oh, hello.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, hello.
So during a major Neptune transit, Neptune opposite my sun, which it takes 164 years to run the zodiac.
All right,
so
you've got some witchy stuff going on. Is yeah. there Scorpio in your chart?
Yes. Yep.
Oh.
Yeah.
See? That's some witchy stuff going on there. You have like for this sure. internal guidance being like, we need to sit on your Neptune line in Nashville right now. Okay.
Totally.
We need to get some witchy.
I look back before I started really looking at astrocartography, I'm like, oh, I didn't even focus on that before I moved to LA. And I went through a series of major Pluto transits in LA. LA's on my Pluto line. So there is something to it.
There has yeah. to be, because why else would your internal guide you there?
Totally.
And then to give you a lot of space to go through yeah. this Uranus, yeah. you know, opposition, which is so cool. And I love that I know just enough to hang on here with you.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I can follow this. I think our reading beforehand helped because, you know, I wouldn't say I'm astrology illiterate, but it was something my dad always did. Like my dad, when we were born, my dad had Vedic charts done for us.
Oh, wow.
And he...
That's amazing.
Yeah. And he was like, your south node is in Taurus and your north node is in Scorpio and you're going to be really into superficial stuff as a Taurus. And I was like, I don't know what that means. Like, and why are you focusing on the negative, Dad? And he's like, well, you don't have to give into it. Taurus is many things. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. But I still remember that.
Yeah. It's amazing how those things stick, right? Yeah. I shy away from the predictive in that way. It's like, yeah, what's the juice here? What's the opportunity? Mm-hmm. What's the earth curriculum? Mm-hmm. What's the soul trying to communicate that maybe the ego is stuffing or blocking or fearful around?
Is there, would you say that there is a shadow side to every sign? Like,
yes,
the shadow version, yeah, of itself, right? Like, I know, I think most people relate to Scorpio as the shadow version, but when you dig deeper, the Scorpio is the mystic, you know?
Oh, I love Scorpio. I have my Mars in Scorpio and Uranus, but Scorpio is the unsung hero of giving. Mm. Lose a Scorpio in your life, you will feel the absence of that emotional and energetic support. There is a giving to Scorpio energy that is unspoken. It's not acts of service. It is an energetic presence that is unlike anything else. And it gets a bad rap, but if you have that and you abuse it and you lose it, I promise you, you'll feel it.
Well, I think like any sign, Scorpio, if you're not actualized and you're wielding this energy, this power,
yes,
it can, like anything, if it's wielded with insecurity, then you're gonna be slashing and burning. But if it's wielded, if you come into that power and you're present to it, then I think you can actually, I wanted to say use it, but I don't think you really use Scorpio power. I think it's just something.
It just is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you ever see The Incredibles? Mm-hmm. Your kids ever, mm-hmm, you know, the baby Incredible, mm-hmm, is like flying all over. Yeah. Exactly. Like,
doing this. Unactualized Scorpio energy. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, any superpower, right? Yeah. It's like, yeah, just what happens until we own our own force.
Yeah, and do the work of understanding the shadow tendencies.
100%.
Yeah, which I think, you know, I've always thought of my childhood because it was not an easy one, but I think of it as the invitation for a lot of work. It was, yeah, the invitation for a lot of transformative, and there were so many stages of metabolizing it. You know, stage one is, fuck you, I hate you.
Yes, of course.
Right.
Of course. Yes.
Assholes. Step two is, oh, actually, you know, this is the way back to myself. And this is the lessons that I needed. And this is the humbling. And this is all of these things. And to kind of come back down a path and revisit it with a new set of eyes changes the landscape entirely. You were talking about time earlier, and I was thinking, like, as a kid, we would travel down these roads that felt like forever. But the next time we traveled down that road, it felt like a minute.
Yes. And that happens now. If I'll go somewhere, I don't know where I'm going, and then I, like, that takes coming back, right? Our relationship to it absolutely shifts. My spiritual teacher used to say, a wonderful childhood makes for a really challenging adulthood.
Oh. So does that mean a challenging childhood makes for a really lovely adult?
Well, it means that you're given the opportunity, right, to, mm-hmm, learn those tools.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but I think it's all what we make of it, right? Like, my mother is trapped from a horrific childhood. She could never relieve herself from it. And as she's in her final stage and her body's giving out, it's, you know, a lot of material comes up around that. And she wasn't able to move through it. And she had four children. And, you know, there's a lot of caring of that. So I knew, I saw that. And I was like, there's got to be a different way. And to her credit, she has done nothing but been supportive of my own journey and healing in that way. But sometimes you got to see what doesn't work.
And it's, you know, isn't that the purpose? It's like each generation moves a little bit further.
The needle, to differentiate, to integrate. I thought rebelling was the way to get away from it. What was interesting about rebelling is it actually just made recognizing it more difficult, because I thought I'd gotten away with it, but I just dressed it up with new clothes and a different shade of lip.
That's it, right? So it's like, how can I not go the opposite way? And also realizing, like, there's a lot that I have from my mom, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, she's a voracious reader and really philosophical in a lot of ways, and in a lot of ways had her values on straight, and that was in discordance with the environment, the greater community that I was raised in, you know. But it's all there, right? The complexity of it, and how, you know, the other extreme wouldn't be healthy either if I were just like, oh, everything is perfect and everything is happy and let, you know, that wouldn't work either.
Yeah, it's not change in the opposite direction. It comes back to the conversation we had earlier, which is nuance.
Yeah, that's
it's
it.
The nuance of differentiation. It's not rebelling took me right back to the issues just looked differently, which is kind of a mind fuck, but actually to welcome home the things that were really nourishing and wonderful, and also being able to parse out the things that just didn't really work, not in a way that's like, I reject all of this. It's more like, how does this serve me in a different way than I thought?
And that's it.
Yeah. How does this serve me in a different way? And it's interesting because my journey took me full circle, especially through my illness, back to my parents' philosophies and the way that they viewed things. Everything that I went humbug was like, was actually my, ultimately what saved me were all of those things. And, you know, instilling a belief and a stubbornness of like, you can make, you know, you can do this, you can do hard things. And
well, there's the Taurus.
Yeah.
Stubbornness.
Taurus, South Node, and then the Scorpio.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah. My dad was really funny. I remember he goes, when I got married the first time, he goes, you're marrying the wrong guy. You're going to divorce him. And I was like, yeah, right. And he's like, I see it in your chart. And I was like,
But that's the thing, right? We have to go through the lessons. Part of the, you know, one of the things I say in my circles is like, we're not here to offer solutions.
Right.
We are here to listen and to be with what is and give every participant the dignity of their own process. And to be able to share, and from that place, not from a place of, I'm going to get, this is the solution, this is the solution, this is the solution, but, right? And often we rush to give solutions because we ourselves are uncomfortable with the unknown, or we want to be seen as the savior, the one who has the answer. Yeah.
Yeah. And in truth, I think the life lived carries more weight.
Yes.
It carries more weight because it means that, you know, the weight of our own lives is we're present to it versus there are no shortcuts unless you're shortcutting the experience.
That's right. So well said. There you go. Mic
and
drop.
If you're shortcutting the and if you're shortcutting the experience, then what are you losing?
Yeah.
You know? By that shortcut. So many things in my life, I think of my mom and I have a lot of compassion for her because I was the kid who had to go through the thing. I couldn't, she couldn't say, I know how this is going to turn out. Don't do it. And I was like,
But look at all the wisdom and look at the people that you're helping and all, you know, it's all this just blossoming and becoming and unfolding.
Yeah. And welcoming, I am welcoming in the Chiron era. I'm glad. I know. I'm be curious to the listeners. Like and maybe it's my Capricorn moon, but I'm a planner. I love, you know, like as soon as I felt this transition, I was like, what is this? I'm reaching out to Danny. Yeah. Danny, what's going on in the stars? Like, tell me, or this time of life. Like, I like to, I know that I can't plan for the road ahead, but I know with understanding, I can welcome it in with understanding.
Well, having a map, having, you know,
an understanding of the landscape is always helpful, right? To know the terrain.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean you're going to know exactly, you know, what you're going to pass along the way or how you're going to metabolize it. But to have that, you know, that landscape understanding is, I mean, it's why I do what I do.
For me, it's priceless because I would love for people who are zodiac curious to check you out because, you know, those transitions, I see a lot of girls in that transition, that 28, 29 transition, health-wise things coming up. Awareness is coming up, that Uranus, the 40s, that was a big one for me. And then now the Chiron 49, 51 era, like I think it's a beautiful education and a tool in the tool belt. And to kind of let go, what I love about your approach is it's letting go of these preconceived notions of what governs our life and over-identifying with certain ideas of what the sign means.
Yes,
but
yes.
Becoming more fluid with that interaction and that interpretation to really make it your own experience, because, you know, I have Scorpio rising and my whole life I was like, oh, that's so bad. That's so bad. Until I started to actually metabolize it differently and go, no, actually it's powerful and not everybody's going to like that.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly. The story that we're telling ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Because for the longest time I wouldn't tell people, because of course I knew, like my dad made sure I knew what I was. It's like, you're a Pisces sun and a Scorpio rising and a Capricorn moon. And I was like, oh, Scorpio.
I mean, that is a powerful combo. That is like deep feminine.
So I'd be like, I'm Pisces, guys. Everybody likes a Pisces, right? Can I fit in here?
And but then, that, you know, whole thing of labeling and like dismissing people based on it's like spiritual racism.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, you could feel that kind of that. Well, really what it is a misunderstanding of what it is. And I had that great misunderstanding of this shameful rising sign. I you know, but it was interesting though, to see how people could feel it. People could feel it.
Yeah, you know? Because.
Yeah, because I was.
We're like, energetic beings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We are energetic beings. I have another, before we wrap up today, and thank you so much. What a beautiful conversation. What is the, like, is there timelines to your north and south node? And is there anything to touch on with the midheaven, which nobody talks about midheaven, but I feel like it plays a pretty important
role? Yeah. So the midheaven and then the nadir, I see. That axis is the most public part of our chart and the most private part of our chart. So the midheaven is really significant. Transits to the midheaven are really significant. Any aspects of the midheaven are really significant. I focus on it strongly, compose the angles. And then we have the ascendant, descendant. So those angles are super important and need tending to for sure. And the north node, so we have our first north node return at 19. And then roughly every 19 years or so. And they are, like I said, a kind of call to self-actualization. So it could be a whisper, becomes louder as we get older. It's pushing past our comfort zone.
That's really cool. Danny, thank you so much for today.
Thank you for having me.
What a pleasure. Yeah, what a pleasure and a joy. And
such an honor.
I will post where people can find you, where they can work with you. I'm definitely going to be back for another little reading on my midheaven situation because I feel like I'm at odds with it.
Let's explore that.
I know. there's some stuff to talk about there. I hope you have a wonderful afternoon. I can't wait to put this episode out. So
thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining our conversation. I hope that it expanded you in all kinds of fun and interesting ways because, you know, this life stuff can get pretty serious if we let it. And I think playing with our nutrition, concepts in life, you know, allowing things to come in and inspire us to think differently and approach things differently is just how I treat myself, quite honestly. I used to be a person addicted to sugar, and after resolving and coming to peace with the parts of myself that you know, really related to sugar as a trauma response, as a way to maintain a certain traumatized state of imbalance and dysregulation. Healing that has allowed me to seek out treats in life, learning, connecting, opening myself to learn and try new things and not be held back and paralyzed by fear and insecurity. And so much of those things weirdly resolved when I realized that my disordered relationship to food was really a disordered relationship I had with myself. And that contemplation took me deeper, and it has set me free. Now there are no rules. There is only care for my body with deep love and appreciation. And every meal I eat is a love letter to my body, a thankfulness for my body to thrive after incredible illness. And I seek out the treats in life. I seek out the learning, the connection. So thank you for being here and part of this incredible unfolding and connecting. And I wish you well wherever you are in this beautiful world.